This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
How often have you heard a mum complain that her teenage boy is moody, unpredictable and won't talk to her? How can we better connect with the teenage boys in our life? Dr. Anna Rubinstein was a GP for 12 years until he devoted himself full-time to the work of improving the well-being of teenage boys and girls. And since then, he's been developing programs to help young boys transition into good men. Dr. Anna normally resides on an acreage on the far north coast of New South Wales. I'm a little bit jealous about that. But we're very fortunate to have him here with us in Sydney today. Thanks for making the trip out here, Dr. Anna.
Pleasure. Really nice to be here.
Yeah. So when did you first get the sense that young boys were losing their way?
Well, look, when I was working as a doctor, it always amazed me that I'd have fantastic kids come into my surgery full of life and energy and bouncing around, and then I'd see the same kids or their older brothers as teenagers, and they'd be, you know, often sullen and shut down and have their hats pulled down over their faces, and, you know, they were angry and they were looking for trouble. And I just couldn't understand how kids were getting such a good start and then so many of them were going off the rails.
Yeah, and I guess in your work in emergency too, you probably saw some young boys coming in, you know, after making some maybe bad decisions on a night out.
I would say stupid decisions. Yeah. and didn't even have to be on a night out. You know, yeah, they could do it in the middle of the day. I mean, basically they were looking for trouble or they were looking to push their edges, and it concerned me, and I was really interested to know, you know, why they were doing what they were doing.
Yeah, and so why did you leave medicine?
Well, I started doing some work with teenagers, and I just found that it was such powerful work, and I also found that a lot of the issues that I was dealing with in medicine, especially with men, was older men who had issues that often came back to their self-esteem and addictions that they had to cover other issues that they had. And then when we looked at it, a lot of their problems started when they were teenagers. And I thought, you know, wow, if we could do something to help the kids when they're young, they could avoid so many problems later on in their lives. And it just, you know, made a lot of sense to me.
So in a sense, what you're doing now is preventative medicine.
Correct. I still feel like I'm working as a doctor. I'm just doing it in a different way.
Yeah. And so what's the kind of crucial age where boys really need help in that transition from boyhood to manhood?
Look, it varies slightly, but it's sort of somewhere between 12 and 15 when they're changing. And you know, all of a sudden they just become different. They become moody, or they start locking the door to their bedroom, or they, you know, they're grumpy, or they start challenging things in a different way. And it's around about that time that I believe, instead of just saying, oh, they're a teenager and, you know, they'll get over it, it's actually, that's the time when we need to be putting more energy and effort into them to help them at this time.
Okay, so how can you tell the difference between, you know, I guess, normal kind of teenage behavior? Like a lot of people say their teens are sort of, you know, silent and moody or difficult or whatever, and we put it down to just sort of teenage hormones. How can you tell if it's just that or if there's something really kind of going wrong?
Look, it's in my book, one of the things I talk about is I actually believe that teenage boys are naturally creative, funny, energetic, passionate, loyal, all of these things. And I've actually been quite challenged on that because, you know, there is kind of this expectation that teenage boys do become uncommunicative and sullen and shut down. And I actually don't agree that that's normal. Okay. I think it's got so much to do with the environment. When they feel seen, when they feel safe, you watch them with their friends and see how they're bouncing around all over the place, and they'll speak on the phone until, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning if you let them. They've got plenty to say and they've got plenty going on inside their heads. It's just a matter of creating the environment where they feel comfortable and safe to come out with that.
Okay, we'll talk more about that after the break. But just psychologically, what's the difference between, you know, a boy and a man? Because, you know, I think there are plenty of boys walking around in a man's body and probably vice versa as well. There's probably some very mature young men, you know, who are still boys technically.
Yeah, well, one of the things I talk about is, so boy psychology is what we typically see in a 6 to 8 year old, which is, you know, they want to be the center of attention. They want continual acknowledgement. They think they're immortal. They don't take responsibility for their actions. And they're looking for a mother. Mm. And that's what you would expect from a 6 to 8 year old.
Oh, and they chuck tantrums. Don't forget that one.
Yeah. They can't stand with their emotions. Correct. So in a healthy adult man, we understand that, you know, power is for sharing. We have responsibilities within our community, that you know, we're mortal. We have to be able to stand with our emotions. And instead of looking for a mother, you know, we actually want relationship with the feminine. And, you know, I've spoken to many, many, many women and said, have you ever met a man who still functions on boy psychology, where he wants power, acknowledgement, you know, doesn't take responsibility, and he's looking for a mother?
Yeah.
And many women say they actually know a man just like that.
Oh, of course. I'm sure we all do.
Yeah.
I'm talking to Dr. Anna Rubinstein. He's an expert in helping teenage boys become men. He's also the author of The Making of Men. And he's got a particular interest in rites of passage. So, Dr. Anna, how do rites of passage help boys move out of boyhood into manhood?
Well, I do have particular interest in rites of passage because they've been practiced by traditional societies for so many thousands of years. And what they do, there are a couple of key things that they aim to do. One is to create this shift from boy psychology, which we talked about before, to healthy man psychology, because they recognize you couldn't have the men in your community still running around as boys and still wanting power and acknowledgement. I mean, imagine if our politicians didn't take responsibility for their actions. And
oh,
you know,
imagine. Yeah.
Imagine. But the other really important thing is that a rite of passage is designed to actually help a boy find out what their special gifts and talents, their genius, their spirit is.
Yeah.
The belief is that every one of our kids is different and every one of our kids has talents and something wonderful, and that we need to give them the message that we don't want them to be like what they see on television or on billboards or in the media or internet, that we actually love them for who they are, and that's what we want to bring out of them.
Mm.
So a rite of passage, a part of it is actually acknowledging the gifts and talents, the spirit of each of our children, because we need that diversity. We need them to all be different. And when we can help them tap into what they're actually passionate about, that's when they're going to do best.
Okay. So what are some examples of how you actually do that in practice?
Well, one of the things that we do is we spend time with them. So we create opportunities for boys to spend time with their fathers or other men.
Okay.
To hear the stories of those men. So the best,
so like father-son camps, that kind
father-son
of thing?
Father-son camps, yep. And gatherings and weekends or evenings, where, first of all, the boys get to hear the stories of the men as a way of learning knowledge. They talk about their challenges, and on a camp we'd actually create challenges for the boys, because, you know, if we don't, one of the things about all the risk-taking behaviors that they're doing is because we're not providing these challenges, they're going to go out and do it themselves. Boys need challenges.
Yeah.
They need something to make themselves feel like men.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's so important is that there's a point on all of our programs where the boys sit in front of the other men and the other boys, and their father or the men who are there come up and they tell that boy the things that they admire, they respect, and they love about him. And what they're doing is they're saying, we see you, and we see your gifts and talents, we see your genius, we see your spirit, and we want you to be that person. And the impact that has on this boy's self-esteem is actually life-changing.
Well, I was going to say, what changes do you see in the boys as a result of this?
Well, you see them grow, basically, as you're looking at them. But they gain a confidence in their lives, because there's so much pressure now for all the kids to be the same. And it's just not okay, because they're not all the same.
No.
And so when a boy actually really gets the message from his father, from other men, that he is okay just for being who he is, that's massive. I mean, one of the things that we know is most kids are struggling, and most kids think they're the only one who's struggling.
Right.
Most of the boys think every other boy is okay.
He's got it together. Wow, that's crazy. So is this something that, you know, families can do themselves, or does it help to connect to a wider community? How do we actually implement this as a society?
Sure. It's something I talk about a lot in my book, The Making of Men, that ideally there is a community input into the celebration and acknowledgement of a boy becoming a young man.
Okay.
And that can be in a, you know, through the school or sporting community, or there are organizations that run these programs. But otherwise, it is absolutely possible for a family to set up a process that acknowledges and celebrates their son becoming a young man. And it can be as simple as when he has his birthday party, you know, sitting him down in front of the guests and the family, and people coming up one at a time in front of everyone else and telling the boy, what they love about him, the things that they think are beautiful and wonderful, his particular characteristics that they really admire.
Yeah, but it sounds like it has to be something that's a very deliberate decision. It's not just going to happen accidentally.
That's right. It is a deliberate decision. And if we don't make it happen, the risk is that they will try and do it to themselves, or that it doesn't happen at all. And then, as you talked about earlier, we end up with men who are still running around feeling and thinking and acting like boys.
Yeah.
And we don't want that.
And just before we finish, Dr. Anna, I mean, I know you talked about, fathers and sons sitting down and doing this, but if dad's not around, how can mums make this happen?
Look, whatever men they can bring into their boys' lives, so it can be grandfathers, uncles, stepfathers, coaches at school, boys need time with other men. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that when the time happens, I usually find the men step up because older men also love spending time with, with boys, and it gives them an ability to pass on their knowledge, and something really cool happens when they get together.
Yeah, okay, that's great. Well, thanks so much for sharing some of your ideas with us this morning, Dr. Anna.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, lovely to have you. It's Dr. Anna Rubenstein talking about how rites of passage can help boys in the transition to manhood, and you can find out more in his book, The Making of Men, or you can visit drarna.com.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.